Welcome, and thank you for standing by for today's conference call. At this time, I need to remind all participants that you are in a listen-only mode. However, we will be doing questions and answers today, at which time all parties will be asked to press star one to ask a question, make a comment. At this time, I need to remind parties today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections to the recording, please disconnect now. We'll go ahead and get started with our very first speaker. I'm turning this call over to Deputy James Stallone, sir. You can begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Deputy Secretary of the State, James Stallone, and on behalf of Secretary Merrill, I'd like to thank all of you, and it sounds like we have a very good turnout for this third Tuesdays at 2 conference call in preparation for the election a week from today. Today's topic is Election Day Review, in which Peggy Reeves, our Elections Director, and Ted Bromley, our Senior Staff Attorney, will be going over some of those last-minute things you should be bearing in mind over the next 7 days as you prepare for this this important election day. So again, thank you for your attention and all of the work you're doing to prepare for the election. And so now I'll turn the call over to Peggy.
Thanks, Jamie. Good afternoon. I'm here with Ted, and we would like to take you through some of the things we have on our list, but certainly we will open this up to questions to hear what you have to say. The election is 1 week out now, and so we assume that you have told us about your polling places, given us all your ballot certification papers, told us about your EDR locations, which I think we have just about everybody on that list. And we will be, in fact, we already have posted that on our website to alert the public as to where those Election Day registration locations are. I want to talk a little bit about the IVS machines. I think Ted Bromley may be sending you out something again today as a reminder, but Tammy Wells has a new field testing in place, which we've alerted you about in the past. This, remember, is a new preview and practice line, which gives you the opportunity to preview the actual Election Day ballot at your own convenience. Instead of the Election Day fax that we do, you can actually set it up beforehand and check to make sure that it is working properly. If you have any questions about the telephone lines, last week we let you know that AT&T will no longer have any jurisdiction over the landlines, and it will now be owned by Frontier Communications, which is a Connecticut company, so it should give us good service to contact them. If you have any questions at all about your orders, to make sure that your orders have been received, that your election lines are working, you can contact me. I have a contact at Frontier, and they will do their very best. They have promised me that voting is up at the top of their list. They understand how important this is for all of us in the state, and they will make sure that your election lines are working properly. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Ted.
I think a couple of reminders from my standpoint would be that I know that IVS has sent around or will be sending around a quick reference guide that they just sent to us. So if one of you are out there has already gotten that, please just during the question and answer chime in and let us know to make sure that that got through. It's a handy little guide that gives you a quick explanation of preview and practice and the voter and the line to use on election day and a help desk line and that kind of thing. So be on the lookout for that. The other thing that I just wanted to go over again, and I know I did last conference call, was that by now you should have received from us three different voting returns. Again, the spreadsheet format that was sent out maybe, at this point, maybe 3 weeks ago, was meant to be primarily used by your town clerks, and it is intended to be used as a return by voting district. That is the spreadsheet that was put together by the legislature, or the Office of Legislative Research, rather, and it is used specifically for redistricting purposes in the coming years. So that's an important return, but it is not due on election night. It is due 21 days after the election. The second return that you should have received from us after, I think it was the second conference call, was more of a PDF return with some radio buttons in it, developed, again, I'll give Matt Wagner the credit on that, developed by the hard work of him, and we appreciate that. And that is the moderator's return, and by clicking a few buttons, you can customize that to your town and use it. And again, that's the moderator's return. That would be what is used at each polling place and then given to the head moderator. The third return that you should have gotten from us, which was sent out last week, Friday, I believe, in the mail, so you might not have gotten it until Monday, is the head moderator's return, which I know many of you have received because I've gotten a few questions. It is the probably 4, maybe sometimes 5 page return with boxes where the vote totals go and the candidates' names. It has a stats page, which you report to us your voter turnout. And then it also has a supplemental page, which provides 3 important things for us. One, it provides you a space to put in the number of EDR ballots cast in your town. It is not a vote-by-vote total per candidate. It is simply the number of EDR ballots cast. So if in the town of Bloomfield there were, you know, 900 EDR ballots cast throughout the various districts, the number 900 would go on that line. The second space on that supplement that is important is a space for your judge of probate candidates. The judge of probate candidates, because of all the redistricting and the special legislative acts that happened a few years ago, our database doesn't really effectively handle judge of probate in the way that would include them on the boxed return, which is a question that we got from some of you. So you are simply adding your judge of probate candidates and vote totals on the supplement for us. And then the third spot on that supplement is a spot for you to report to us the constitutional amendment vote totals. And on that same spot, you can also include any vote totals for any local questions that you have, and you would have to include your local question in that spot. Of course, if you have more than 1 or 2 local questions and you need additional space, you can always go on to a second page for that. So those are the 3 returns that you should have received from us. Hopefully that clarifies their uses. But the most important one, the head moderator's return, is the one that we need on election night, because that one will help us, help you, figure out if there is any statewide recount. Hopefully we won't have to discuss that, but if we do, the sooner those vote totals come in to us, the sooner we can let you know about the status of that calculation.
Okay, just a reminder, as you know, today is the last session for making voters in person, with the exception of matured rights, which goes until Monday. But today you need to be in your offices or your deputies or assistants until 8 p.m. We have received some phone calls of people who went to your offices and could not find you. So if, in fact, you have to leave the office to go into another part of Town Hall, please post a notice on your door that you have you've temporarily walked down the hall and tell people to please wait for you. We just want to be sure that no one is turned away today. We've also received some phone calls from people who are physically disabled and confined to their homes, therefore they cannot appear in person for the voter registration session. So you have the ability to go to their homes to bring an application to register to vote, and also if they need to vote by absentee, to also bring that absentee ballot application. Just one of you need go. This does not require opposing parties. So you can send your deputy or yourself to go if you get that phone call today. I just want to be sure that you're aware of that law. The other thing I wanted to talk about is your websites regarding what is required to use when you vote in person. Please understand that we do have voter identification in our election laws. However, if you are not an asterisk voter, then of course you just need to sign the form swearing that you are the person on the checklist. So We have received some phone calls from people who say that they checked the town's website, and the town's website said that they absolutely had to have either photo ID or something with their signature or something with their address, and there was nothing about signing the other form. So we want people to be aware that, in fact, if they lack all of those, and again, if they're not an asterisk voter, then they do have the right to vote on Election Day. The third thing I want to mention about Election Day is that, obviously, because we have Election Day registration, I would assume that there would be very limited use of provisional ballots. There would still be a case, for example, where you would use a provisional ballot if the person shows up and they're an asterisk voter and they lack any identification at all, and therefore couldn't go to the EDR location because they wouldn't have the proper identification, then you might give them a provisional ballot. But honestly, we would say, for the most part, if someone shows up and their name is not on the list, that you really should direct them to the EDR site rather than giving them a provisional ballot, because you know in 90% of the cases, those provisional ballots never count. So we want to be sure that everyone is given the opportunity to vote.
Okay, so the next thing that we wanted to just touch on is that we've been getting several phone calls, of course, from the local and, I guess, national press about what the press can do and when they can do it in terms of access to a polling place. So we wanted to just briefly touch on that because undoubtedly every year we get a phone call from somebody inquiring about the press wanting access to a polling place. So just in general, the relevant statute is 9-236, and buried toward the end of that is the ability for the press to enter and remain and leave any polling place or restricted area. So what does that mean? So it means that representatives of the news media may conduct exit polls of voters either inside or outside the 75-foot limit. Polls may not be conducted in the room where the voting takes place. So if they want to interview some voters about their thoughts about the election, things of that nature, they can certainly do it inside the 75-foot bubble, but they should certainly do it away from the entrance for the polling place so that, you know, if they're interviewing a voter and the voter says, oh, the great candidate, you know, X, and people are walking by, that they, you know, that voters entering the polling place shouldn't be disturbed, but they can certainly be within that 75-foot bubble. News media personnel may enter the room to observe the election, which does include taking stock photographs or videoing, but they shouldn't be taking video or photographs of how an individual is voting, meaning so close that they're peering over the voter's shoulder, watching them fill in bubbles or something of that nature. Let's see, what else am I looking for here? And so in all of this, what we are going to inform the media of is that they should bring some type of press credential with them, and they should identify themselves clearly to either the voters if they're looking to interview them or the poll workers and the moderator at the polls. In addition, telling them that they can't be disruptive to the extent, even if they are inside the 75-foot bubble, but they are actually, let's say, clogging up the exit to a polling place or clogging up the entrance to a polling place or something of that nature, then certainly the moderator does have the ability to ask them to either leave or move or to reposition themselves so as they're not interfering. So it's not a 100% a right to access if they're interfering with the process. Certainly the moderator does have some ability to work with the media at that point. Let me just see. I'm looking over my notes here. Okay. All right. So I think I'm good with that.
So I want to talk a little bit about the Secretary's Legal Assistance Program. As you remember, back in 2012, we had a collaboration with the Connecticut Bar Association to train volunteer attorneys who would be our eyes and ears on the ground. So if we heard of something happening where someone felt that someone's rights were being violated or something was going on or there were long lines, we could dispatch an attorney to go to that particular polling place. He would have a letter of appointment as a designee from the Secretary of the State, and he would be able to enter the polling place and just to gather information firsthand, then to give us a call and tell us what's happening. Certainly if we had a large staff and had the luxury of sending people out to do this, that would be great, but we don't. You know that we will be working very hard up here at 30 Trinity Street. So it has been a great collaboration with the Connecticut Bar Association. Ted and I personally trained all of the attorneys who are going to be designated as the special volunteer attorneys. Again, they will only be dispatched if we have an issue, and they will come with a letter signed by Secretary Merrill. If you have any questions about that program, you can certainly call us. But we think that this will be very successful this year to be sure that we are aware of anything that may be going on with any election issues.
And just to add to what Peggy said, I mean, this program, you should not feel as though this is us watching you. Peggy and I had the privilege and a very interesting experience when her and I were sort of the guinea pigs for this project back in 2011. And just for an example of the things that this program can help us with, Peggy and I received a phone call as we were standing outside a polling place in a town, and the report was that the moderator or the poll workers were turning away voters from the polls. And it just so happened, and this is a really a true story, we were standing outside that exact polling place when this call came through. And when, in fact, we got down to the facts of it, the report simply was that an individual had gone into the wrong polling place. The poll workers had directed that individual to the correct polling place. And so it wasn't that drones of people were being turned away. It was simply a matter of communication. So we hope that this program will be of similar benefit. So these people are really down there to be our eyes and ears, to gather the facts and to sort of assess whether or not the situation is one like I have just described, or whether it is one that we really do need to get involved with because there may very well be a problem. So, you know, when these people show up, you know, please make sure that you let your moderators know when you're doing your trainings that you know, they're really there not to spy, but really there to help us, all of us, including you, because to the extent that it's not a problem, we can put that to bed right away. And it'll be a benefit to everybody.
And in a similar vein, I wanted to say that the Office of Protection and Advocacy will also be sending observers. The goal of those observers is to gather information about service to voters with disabilities. They will also be given an appointment letter from our office with their name on it. They're there just to see firsthand what is going on. They are not there to be enforcers. They're not there to yell at you because you don't have your IVS system set up, although I hope you will have it set up. But they would report back to us and tell us if it is not. So you will, you should be aware that you'll have two types of really designees, the volunteer attorneys and possibly someone from the Office of Protection and Advocacy. Or they may just be going down to see if your EDR location is accessible to voters with disabilities. Those are the type of things they'll be doing. They may not even enter the polling place. They may be just outside the polling place to see the lay of the land in terms of the entrances and making sure that they're accessible for someone in a wheelchair. So you may not even see them, or they may come inside. But if they do, please be aware that they have to show you a letter.
So in anticipation of Election Day, what our office is going to do is we have prepared for worst-case scenarios because we're all optimists. So what we're going to do is we are going to, in the event that there's an emergency where something is affecting our office or the communication system, like maybe the phones go down or something of that nature, we are going to have a backup plan where we have a number of cell phones. A number of cell phones that will be available to a bunch of our staff, and so you'll be able to call them directly. So we will be sending that information out, in the next coming days. But it's important to keep in mind, and I will stress this, is that please don't use those numbers unless we have indicated that it's sort of a, quote, critical or emergency situation, because if it's not, we won't be monitoring those cell phones. So just beware. It's just a preparation for the worst in case, and so we always want to be available to you. So we've set that backup plan in motion for you. Finally, before we open it up for questions, one other topic is that, again, the Secretary of State and the Elections Enforcement Commission will be doing our hotline. You should know that the Secretary of State and the Elections Enforcement Commission communicate with each other throughout the day, and, in fact, we have a number of conference calls between the two agencies, sharing notes, sharing experiences, sharing phone calls with potential issues throughout the day. We will release the phone number of the elections hotline to the press as our normal preparations, but for your information, you should know that the hotline number is 1-866-733-2463. And again, that is a hotline for voters where they can call to report any potential issues. And again, just like our volunteer attorneys, you know, we don't just jump on a particular issue because one is reported. We will communicate with the elections enforcement. We compare notes. Oftentimes, our office will get a phone call, and elections enforcement will get the same phone call. We'll compare facts to make sure that whatever it is we're pursuing is appropriate, and then from there, we'll jointly decide, in most instances, what action to take. So we do take those procedures seriously and consider that stuff carefully. Let me see. I'm going to give it back to Peggy.
Sure.
To sum it up.
I just wanted to mention again that the EDR location, you should have all read and reviewed Ted's legal opinion regarding the 8 o'clock cutoff time. You have to be finished your whole registration process. You can't still be standing in line at 8 p.m. And you may need to have security present so that if you should have any issues with people who may have been waiting in line a long time and then are told that they have to leave because they didn't finish the process of registering to vote. If you have any questions about the legal opinion this office has issued, please call us before Election Day so that we can resolve any questions you may have about that. And then one other thing I wanted to mention is that should we need to have any training on recanvassing and recounting, that training will be held on Wednesday, November 5th at 4 o'clock and Thursday, November 6th at 1 p.m., and again, that would only be if we had to have a recount. Certainly a statewide recount, you would all be involved. If there's just some local recounts, we'll be in touch with you. Okay.
I think at this point, if there are any questions, we would entertain those at this point.
This is the operator. Are you ready for questions?
Yes, we're all set.
Okay. Anyone wishing to ask a question, make a comment at this time. We're going to ask you to press star 1 now. Be sure to unmute your phone and state your name at the prompting. We will introduce your name into the question queue. Once again, it is star 1 to ask a question. Should you need to withdraw a request, that is star 2. Star 1 to ask a question, and please stand by for the very first question. One moment, please. Lynn McNamee, your line's open. Go ahead, please.
Hello, this is Lynn. Thank you. I had a question in regards to the physically disabled and that registration. In looking at the calendar, it seemed to be that the deadline for that receipt was for those who matured, became citizens, became residents. For that resident of the municipality on or before October 28th, is there some any sort of timing that would apply if a applicant indicates that it's been, you know, 2 years that they've lived here and they're seeking this? Are we still going out today to register them, or what are some of the guidelines in regards to that? Thank you.
I think that the deadline for using that provision is today, because it talks about the final day for registration, which is today. You know, oftentimes in our election calendar, what we'll do is we'll give you a deadline and then we'll give you future things to consider underneath of that. So, of course, after today, after the deadline today, the only people that should be walking into any of your offices, including anybody that is physically disabled, would be those that whose rights have matured up until the use of Election Day registration. So, the ultimate deadline for in-person, as Peggy said before, is today, and then the deadline for that for the disabled under 31A is also today. So.
Okay, we'll continue on to Mike Wyman. Sir, your line's open. Go ahead, please.
Hello, this is Mike Wyman from Tolland. I just have two questions. In looking at the EDR list at the Secretary's website, might you add the EDR phone numbers to that list?
I don't know. I'm not sure we have them yet, Mike.
Okay. If and when you do, that would be an ideal place to put it.
Oh, wait. Are you talking about the ones where we're gonna where we circulate the spreadsheet and the numbers that each town would call?
Correct.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, Taffy has that. Do you think it's wise to put that out there for everyone to see?
No, I think that's just administrative.
Yeah. Wouldn't that
registrar?
Be sort of internally for just our registrars?
Well, I'm looking at the I see what you're
saying.
At the website. Okay, fair enough. Second question deals with the head moderator's return, and you may have already gotten this question and haven't had a chance to respond. I see the point where we put in the number of EDR ballots that we received. However, when we're counting absentee ballots, nowhere does it mention the number of EDR ballots. And when we're doing the official checklist record on page 2, where you have the number of names on the official list and the number of names having checked as having voted, it talks about voting by machine, by absentee ballot, and by overseas ballot, but it does not include EDR. And my thought is you could conceivably have enough EDR ballots where people voted for governor, where the total votes for all candidates for governor would exceed the number of names crossed off the official list.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Let us take a look at that, and we'll get back to you, because I don't have it in front of me, to be perfectly honest, but I do understand what you're asking.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We'll continue on with Irene DeZette. Your line's open, ma'am. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. My big question is about the write-in candidates. How do we really, should we be handling those?
Okay, well, you all, I'm assuming, received the email from Taffy where it indicates the individuals who are the registered write-in candidates.
Correct.
And so what I think the most efficient thing to do would be to have your moderators at the polling location examine the tabulator tape, because, of course, if somebody fills in a write-in bubble, the machine will indicate that. Of course, it won't tell you who the vote was cast for, but it'll indicate that the bubble has been filled in, and then from there they should be searching for those or locating those ballots to properly report any properly registered write-in vote that would be cast.
I guess basically my question would be, do we just keep the list of the write-in candidates with the moderators? So if somebody is interested, they have to go see the moderator, or do we keep it with the ballot clerks?
You know, I think at that point it would be up to you. I mean, I think a good spot to keep it would be the moderator. However, if you really have a sharp ballot clerk that you are very trustworthy of, then certainly that would be a natural place as well. If somebody's getting their ballot, they might inquire, hey, well, I got this ballot. Are there any write-ins? And certainly they could show it as well. But probably the safest place is the moderator.
Okay. Okay, thank you for your help.
Next up is Judy Strapay. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, this is Judy Strapay in Monroe. I have three quick questions. One is, when we do central counting, are we able to do more than one counting for EDR votes, or do we have to wait until 8 p.m.?
Okay, good question. No, you can do more than one. You can count them similar to absentee ballots. The only caveat being is that if you have an EDR ballot which you have inquired across towns with and they have not gotten back to you right away, you should hold that ballot until the 8 o'clock counting to give the town the most time possible to get back to you. But other than that, if you have straightforward new registrants, you can count them throughout the day if you'd like, or just like absentee ballots, you can hold them and count them all at once at a certain time. I know that some towns were sort of migrating towards starting counting around 6:30 or 7 and doing it all at once, but again, that's really up to you.
Yeah, and just remember, so you can't start before 10 because you just follow the absentee ballot rules. So, but once 10 o'clock has passed, you can certainly do it as Ted mentioned. As long as you're not waiting for a call back, you can certainly start.
Okay, that's great. And you did answer my second question, that the starting time to count ABs and possibly EDR is 10 a.m. My last question is, the end of the night, if we're not able to get through by fax machine, would we be able to scan in our end of the night paperwork and then email it?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly do that. We would hope that the new fax system that we have purchased, which is no longer real fax machines, it's a virtual fax machine, would no longer have those busy signal problems. And in fact, what it does is, even though you send it on your end by fax, it automatically converts it into an email on our end. And again, for those of you that don't have it, it's on the letter that we sent with the head moderator's return. But again, the number is 1-866-392-4023. So we hope we have alleviated that problem, but to the extent that it's absolutely hopeless for you, certainly you can email it to us.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all my questions.
Next up is Catherine from Andover. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hello?
Catherine from the town of Andover, Connecticut.
Andover, do you want your call?
Hi. Sorry, we had another call. I'm just a little confused still about the use of provisional. I have one question, because you talked about how we want to limit the use of provisional ballots, and then you said something about, well, if someone doesn't have an ID, you can give them a provisional ballot. But earlier we also talked about the fact that a person without ID can sign the form, signature of personal identification, which I thought once they sign that form, they get a regular ballot. So I'm a little confused on that.
Okay. Well, really quickly, the use of provisional ballots, and again, we sent out a mailing about it maybe about a month ago. So for those of you that are interested in more detailed information, it's there. But really quickly, for provisional ballots, you use provisional ballots in a federal election only. It's got a federal office on it only, and you issue them in three different ways, right? For an individual who is required pursuant to federal law to provide additional ID because they've registered to vote by mail. The second is that they swear that they should be on the official registry list and for some reason they're not. And the third is if they've been challenged. Now, the one that you're asking about and the one that we were discussing is somebody with ID. Now, you and everybody that's probably on this call, and including everybody in this room with us, are what I call veteran voters, which means that they have voted previously in a municipal or federal election. This is not the first time that they were voting. And so for those veteran voters, they can either produce ID or, if for whatever reason, I heard it's supposed to be nice out, but let's say it's raining on Election Day, they left their wallet in the car and they just don't want to get it because they don't want to get wet. They can, veteran voters, sign a form in lieu of identification and go ahead and vote. However, for those individuals that registered by mail for the first time this year, they are voting for the first time for this election that has a federal office on the ballot, and CVR will actually put an asterisk by their name on the official registry to help you out with this. If those individuals do not have a level of identification when they enter the polls, they may be forced to vote by a provisional ballot. So we have two classes of voters operating in a federal year, and those are the individuals who may need a provisional ballot.
And remember, Catherine, this is not just people who are voting for the first time in a federal year. It's people who, when they registered to vote, were lacking some information on that voter application. They were lacking either the last four digits of their social or the Connecticut driver's license number. That's how they became asterisk voters in the first place.
Okay, so it's kind of a weird web tail.
Yeah. So, and when you give them that, then, let's say because they're not on the checklist or because they have the asterisk next to it, is it just that do we only write PB next to their name on the checklist, or are we adding it to the supplemental checklist?
Well, again, it depends. It depends what class of voters you're talking about. If somebody is obviously already on the registry list, then you're going to put a PB next to their name. If it's somebody who is not on the registry list but swears for whatever reason that they should be, those individuals you would treat differently. However, what I would say is those individuals, the use of a provisional ballot for the individual who swears that they should be on the list but for whatever reason are not, should significantly, if not all, but disappear in your town because now we have Election Day registration. So it would be a lot easier for you to refer them to that location than to have to provide a provisional ballot and ultimately probably judge that they're not a registered voter because they never registered to vote. So that class of provisional voter should significantly drop off for you.
Okay, thank you.
Continue on with Georgia Peck. Ma'am, your line's open. Go ahead, please, ma'am.
Yes, Georgia Peck from Salem. I've got a question about that return by voting district. If you are a single voting district, such as we are, do we still need to return that as well?
No, that's a great question. Thank you for reminding me about that. Those only apply to towns with more than one voting district. So for those individuals that have a single, what is that, about 73, 4 towns now, that have a single voting district, that additional requirement would not apply to you. So thanks for reminding me about that.
Okay, thank you.
We'll continue on to Dana Ariola. Go ahead, ma'am.
Yes. We were wondering if the Secretary of State was going to issue any procedures for processing EDR ballots, and we had also used a lot of materials last year that we don't have, the EDR ballot log, a contact log sheet, an affidavit of delivery and receipt, and a certification of EDR ballots. Could we be issued those this year as well?
All of the material is actually in the EDR handbook that I think we've sent out a couple of times, and then we issued it at the ROVAC conference both in July and again in September, I guess. So if you need it again, just shoot me an email, and I'll certainly turn it around to you. But all of those, the ballot log, the affidavits, all of that stuff is in that packet.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next up is Suzanne Woodward. Go ahead, ma'am. Your line is now open.
Yeah, I had the same question as Mike Wyman about the official checklist report, part of the head moderator's return. So I think all of that verbiage needs to mention EDR if it applies, and I think from what I read, it does, but I'm not totally sure. The other comment I had, and I don't know if anybody else has run into this, on the constitutional amendment question, I heard somebody say something disturbing today, that there was more to it if it comes out yes than it appears to the average voter. that if you vote yes and this passes, that it's going to open up the doorway for things in the Constitution other than early voting or the restrictions that we have on absentee ballot. Could you just clarify that there's no little glitch that people are going to be surprised if this passes?
Hi, Jamie Spallone here. I think the explanatory text speaks for itself in that it shows, in addition to the explanatory text, the document that will be at the polls and has been with absentee ballot material indicates that certain language would be stricken from the Constitution that concerns the reasons why you need an absentee ballot and when votes can be received, i.e., that votes could be received before Election Day, perhaps in person.
Okay, but you haven't had any reports of any kind of rumors circulating around the state to the nature of, you know, this could be very dangerous.
No, the only confusion there may be is that some folks may believe inaccurately that this has something to do with generally amending the Constitution or holding a constitutional convention. And I think it's 20 years, every 20 years, there's required to be a question on the ballot as to whether to have a constitutional convention. And the last time that was in 2008.
Okay.
That question failed. So now, that's to say there isn't rhetoric around the constitutional question, and that's just part of the process.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll continue on with Eleanor from New Milford. Ma'am, your line is now open. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. This is Eleanor. My question is, we leave our phone lines and our fax lines on, and they're serviced by AT&T. Is there going to be any issue with that now?
No, there shouldn't be. This is Peggy. There shouldn't be any issue at all about that. If the lines have been kept on,
mm-hmm.
obviously you need to check to be sure that they're working properly, and I assume you will be doing that this week.
Yes, we do.
If you pick up the line and it's dead, please contact us right away, and I will contact the individual I have been given.
Okay.
Remember, this process actually isn't going to be taking place until late Friday night. But they have assured us that they will work to make sure that everything is working properly. So just give me a call if you have.
Should I check Friday night or before?
You should check before.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Next up is Margaret Vale. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi. This is Margie Vale. I just have a weird thing. When a voter tried on the website to get our town sample ballot, it comes up as Salem, Connecticut.
Which town are you?
Yeah,
Salisbury.
I'm going to go check it now.
Okay. I did check it after I was told this, and when you hit Salisbury, Salem comes up. The only thing on the ballot that changes is actually the Registrar of Voters column. So I'm not sure it will cause any major problems, but I wanted you to know.
Okay, great, thanks. We'll take a look at that, and if it is, we'll switch it out. It's probably just we get a 700 and some odd different ballot styles, so we probably scan the wrong one in.
Okay, thank you.
But thanks.
Next up, I'm here in Berkeley from Lebanon, Connecticut.
Hello?
Yep, hi.
Hi, yeah. I'm calling just wondering if it's possible if you could create some kind of a document outlining what you answered the question about the provisional ballots. If we could have some kind of an outline that would say exactly when those would be issued and to whom.
Yeah, there is a document. We've sent it out previous. I don't remember when exactly I sent it out. But if you need it again, just shoot me an email and I can send you the provisional ballot again. And it actually, I believe, is also on our website now. I think we finally got all of our mailings to you posted on the website, so you could go there.
Yeah, if you go under election officials and then under lead communications, you ought to be able to see it there as a document from us.
Great, thank you.
Next up is Pat Wells from Washington, Connecticut.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I have a question. We have Monday to register people who have just turned 18 or people who have just moved into town, whatever. If we have a voter come in and say, oh, I totally forgot I had to register. Can I register now? Do I have to tell them he has to do EDR the next day?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And our last question I have comes from Karen Doyle Lyons. Go ahead, ma'am. Your line's open.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Wishing everyone a good election, by the way. But I guess my question is to Jamie Spallone. I heard someone – I'm sorry, I came in late. We were training. But as far as the question that's on the ballot, I think we've been getting a lot of questions here. Once the question is taken, the absentee ballot is taken out of the Constitution, isn't it correct that then the legislature of the state of Connecticut can make any changes as far as absentee ballot process, such as early voting or any other process that they wish?
Yes, they would be first, I want to emphasize that if the question passes, nothing changes the next day because all the current laws concerning absentee balloting and the conduct of the election on election day remain in the general statutes. So if the legislature took the option of doing nothing, then nothing would change. But what the passage of the amendment would do would be allow the legislature to change the requirements, remove or add requirements for absentee ballot eligibility, or potentially enact different methods for in-person voting.
Thank you. And again, I wish everyone a good and fair, clean election, smooth election, and thank you, Secretary of State, for assisting us.
You're welcome. Thank you for participating in the call, and good luck.
Next up is Cindy Bruno. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, yes, this is Cindy. I have a question about the constitutional question, the answer that Mr. Spallone gave three or four calls ago. It's my understanding, and I'm looking for the handout, that there is a secondary question about moderator returns, and that might be what people are referring to. And that's not a part of the body of the question.
Right. I wish I could see the question as drafted. It's over on Peggy's computer. Maybe somebody has it. But yeah, oh yeah. But what we have right now in terms of moderators' returns is a deadline in the Constitution that does not agree with the deadline in statute, and so it's just eliminating the language in the Constitution. So that we have consistency.
And I understand that. I'm aware of that, and I understand that. But I didn't think it was clear in the way the question was answered because I've gotten the same question. The way the question's on the ballot, it doesn't refer to that cleanup, if you will, and that might be what people are referring to. So just wanted to make that clear that. When you vote yes on the question, there's more than one part to it, and that, I think, is causing a little bit of confusion, I know, for some of our voters.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I show no further questions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then, I'd like to conclude the call by first and foremost, on behalf of Secretary Merrill, thanking everyone who participated in this call and the prior calls. We all agree here that these are essential in getting us all on the same page and sharing information, answering questions in real time, and just getting everybody prepared for the election. Secretary and the staff here are cognizant of the work that you put into preparing for the election all year long, not just in the last week or day before the election, but really all 52 weeks of the year. Getting ready so that the voters can exercise their franchise at this and at the other elections that happen, primaries, referenda, and everything else. So, you know, as we've stated at the beginning of a couple of these calls, certainly expecting a turnout that is higher than last year. And so we're glad that you're getting prepared for Election Day registration, welcoming our representatives that have come to some of your cities and towns to discuss preparation, asking the questions of the staff here. And as you know, both of the major parties will have a get-out-the-vote operation, which will affect your turnout there at the polls. Both the major parties are bringing in surrogates to build up support for their side. So we hope people exercise their franchise, and it's a busy day, and we know that you'll be prepared to handle that. In the meantime, if you have further questions for us, do not hesitate to email or call the staff here at the Secretary of the State's office. Peggy or Ted or the other staff will be happy to assist you. There are no bad questions. All of them are good. All of them are important. And we look forward to working with you on Tuesday to make this an extraordinarily successful election for the voters out there. And one last piece of official word is, remember, if there is a need for a recount, statewide or otherwise, there are calls scheduled already for that. Is there anything further? If not, thanks again and good luck on Tuesday.
Good luck.
At this time, all parties are welcome to go ahead and disconnect from the call. At this time, all parties are invited to go ahead and disconnect from the call. Thank you for joining and have a great day.